Welcome to Building My Legacy Podcast. This podcast is designed for leaders and entrepreneurs who want to leave a legacy and will provide strategies that focus upon key elements for legacy creation, determining your desired impact and its benefit, increasing your legacy's reach by engaging key stakeholders, planning, prioritizing, and executing. Here's your host, Dr. Lois Sonstegard.
All right, we're going to talk to you today. If you have a company that is not growing the way you wish, or maybe you want to improve your leadership skills, or you just want your business to do so much better, and it's just you haven't hit the mark. Well, we've got somebody who's an author, a speaker, she's a researcher, innovator. She's also a trusted advisor to many leaders and helping them push their boundaries and innovate and change their lives and also change their companies and even the culture within those companies. And she joins us today. Great to have Lois Sonstegard with us. Hi, Lois. How are you?
It's so good to be with you. Thank you for this opportunity. I am great today.
It's great to have you here, and especially somebody with your experience and your knowledge and insight in helping companies and even executive leaders really push the boundaries, really move things forward. Before we get into how you help people, I really want to talk about your background. What have you done in the past? I know that you've worked with the healthcare and medical industry. And do I have that right?
That's correct. In manufacturing, I have developed intellectual property in my manufacturing company, took that globally. So I've done a number of things.
You're somebody that's also bought, you've sold companies, and I can think the best description, Lois, is you breathe new life into many companies. That's my view of what you do. And I think a lot of us need that right now. Would you agree?
You know what a great tribute that is, actually. Because I had really thought of it that way, but right, that is what we do. And you are so right, Steve. Right now, I think companies, employees, everybody is so desperate for a new piece of life, a breath of fresh air to blow through the company and change some of the discouragement, the overwhelm, the stress that they're feeling.
Why do you think many companies are feeling that right now? Is it an after product of COVID?
You know, it's really interesting. I think COVID undoubtedly has had an impact, because one of the things that we're seeing and hearing a lot about is people wanting connections. And at the same time we're hearing that, we're also feeling this incredible pushback from employees saying, nope, I really don't want to go back to the workplace. I want to stay at home and work from home. And I think there's a number of reasons for that. But there's this juxtaposition that's taking place where people are crying out for connection. We're seeing that amongst particularly the millennials and the Gen Zers. And yet we're also seeing them pushing away and saying, yes, but I want to do this from home. And so some of that connection that they're looking for, they're also not getting. And so I think that's part of it. COVID has certainly brought that about. I think the other thing that has happened is we have a new sense of distrust that has come into our organizations. If you look at Gallup's recent research, they found that only 24% of employees trust their leaders right now. That's worrisome, right? And then you look at also other research that's been done, and you look at the quiet quitters. Those are the people who show up for work. They just collect a paycheck. They'll do the minimum that's required, and that's their perspective of work. 82% of Gen Zers are quiet quitters. That's our next generation of leaders. So we have some real challenges in terms of what we're needing to bring about. And I think, you know, back to your question, part of that's happened because there's a disillusionment that came out of COVID. Who do we trust? are any of our sources reliable? We've seen our companies struggle through their challenges, and so positions have been cut often. I mean, that has been a way in which companies have managed their profitability and their shareholder value. So employees look at that and they go, but where am I in this picture? And so you have this tension growing. And as I talk with executives, you know, it's easy to blame the executive and say, if it weren't for their bad decisions and their bad way of managing people, this wouldn't happen. They're struggling with the same issues. So it's not just at the beginning, entry, middle management, it's ubiquitous. And so we really need to look at, what do we want to do? How do we want to address it? If we don't address it, I think we're going to be, we're going to really struggle to be competitive and to really be productive. And so the challenge is there. And the good news is, I think there's ways of dealing with it. We don't have to be in this position. We can switch things out and move in a very different direction where people are back to being engaged, back to being enthused. We have innovation, creativity, productivity as foundation pieces to what it is that we do.
Based on everything you said, and by the way, I'm big on research too, so I appreciate all those numbers. But based on everything you said, we're in trouble. we have a problem here. And especially when we talk about, you know, many employees are quiet quitters. So basically, they've already checked out. They're just kind of phoning it in, showing up for work, getting it done and moving on. They haven't personally invested themselves in it. And I don't know if the other side of that is many companies aren't loyal. You know, I hear from so many people, I've been involved in that situation too, where you could work for a company for 20 years and bye-bye, you're gone. Have a great day.
Right.
Thank you.
Right.
And you invested all of that time in your life and you're out the door with, you know, maybe a severance, you know, some cobra and that's it. And then the other challenge here is, and I hear this from so many, and you experience it too, walk into any restaurant, you cannot find servers. You cannot find employees. Everybody is so short-staffed. That being said, why do you think that is? Why are people not working? Or they just want to stay at home, but how are they going to support themselves?
Right. Part of that we've created because we've supported people for a period of time through government subsidies.
True.
Right?
Yep.
So part of it we've self-created. But the other is, I am hearing from people who are staying at home, the hybrid worker, for example, saying, you know what, I'm so tired of our new culture, our new PC culture. I don't know what's safe to talk about anymore. So on the one hand, we say we want authenticity. We want transparency. But you better not say that. You better not use that word. You better not, because you don't know who is going to become unleashed. So there's a psychological safety that we have removed in our need to be all inclusive. We think that being all inclusive will happen by removing certain discussions, right? Or making, almost shaming and blaming people for having those discussions. And so people are opting out to where it's safe. It's safe at home. It's not safe at work.
Interesting. I never thought of it that way. It's almost as if I don't want to go to work and get in trouble for saying something. I don't know, you know, if that's going to get me in trouble. You double think things, you process, you filter, you send an email, got to double check, don't want to get fired for saying that. So now it becomes almost a bland culture within the organization and people fearing for their jobs and fearing for their reputation as to what they might say or do.
Right. And it happens so quickly with very little, often, evidence. All you have to do is say something, raise a question, and a reputation can be destroyed.
Right? Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah. Even just asking the question, Lois, you're right. Even just asking a question, now you're being judged. No, I just wanted to find out the answer.
Right. So there's a curiosity that we have taken away. And think about that. When I create IP, new products that we have patents on, I've done it because I was curious. I asked questions. I said, why doesn't this work? You know, I had somebody from New York visiting me one day. They were in advertising. They wanted me to advertise. And they were sitting at my desk, and they looked at this beautiful box sitting on my desk. And she said, oh, wow, what's in this box? And I opened it up, and I said, it's all of my failures. And she said, you keep your failures in a beautiful box? Mm. And I said, yes, because I don't want to keep redoing the same mistakes. When I look at that, I go, okay, we tried this. This didn't work. How do I need to do it differently? Right? Mistakes are not bad. Mistakes are building blocks. And we've lost that sense of being able to be curious, being able to take and build on something. There's such a fear of I've got to do it right the first time, and I'm better off not making a mistake. One buyer said to me one day out of one of the big retail chains, Lois, I won't ever get fired for not bringing in a product, no matter how exciting it is. But I will get fired if I bring in a product and it doesn't work. And that's the underlying fear.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what happens? Now you have so many employees or even management level people overthinking things. And Now it becomes stale in the culture. The way it works with you when you work with a company, how do you assess what's going on within the walls of the place?
Sure. What I really like to do is to go in and spend some time doing discovery, talking with people, sorting out what are their processes, how are services, products moving, what's the customer response, what's stopping things from working. When there's a problem, who's solving it, who isn't solving it, and why? And those are, right now, those are some of the big questions, because if we're siloed, often it becomes difficult to actually solve a problem, because which silo is really responsible? Who ultimately do you go to? And those matrices we've created partly for checks and balances, because we don't trust even our leaders.
And that goes back to what you said just earlier about employees aren't trusting the leadership of the company. And you know what? I've been at those companies. I have to. And this is, you know, a situation. I work for a company. I left this company about 3 years ago. And that was it. I did not trust the general manager. I had that feeling of, you know what? He's probably not always doing the right thing. And I'm a firm believer, just do the right thing. And others have said the same thing. And guess what? He's not there anymore. Yeah. So, yeah, I think you've nailed, you hit it on the head there in terms of the trust, which is horrible because it starts at the top, right?
It starts at the top. I also think that it can start at the bottom. Much, much easier if it starts at the top. A lot of it, Steve, is people need permission to solve problems. People need permission to build partnerships. People need permission to collaborate. We often don't do it because we don't have the tools to do it, but we also haven't seen people doing it, so we don't have that experience to rely on. And so what we bring to problems is our preconceived notions about situations. And one of the best examples that I learned about this many, many years ago when I was first starting my career, I had been brought down to be a part of the medical school at Texas Tech University. And we were charged with the job of looking at why were the outcomes for women and infants in the West Texas region at that time significantly greater than the rest of the country. And Dr. Jack Schneider was the head of the department. It was together that we were trying to solve this problem. And he was remarkable because he taught me one of the most valuable lessons, and that is we're going to work alongside people to discover where their challenges are and then make them strong where they are. No judgment at all. So we don't go in as experts and say, yep, you're doing this wrong. We're going to change it this way. Instead, let's look at why is it working the way it is and who needs to be included in order to make things work better. So, you know, there's some really interesting research on who should be involved in decisions. And I think this is also part of why things don't work so well right now in our organizations, because not only are we siloed, but we tend to do things by groups of experts that are similar. So here's the research. It came out, it began in 1906 with Francis Galton in London. He was a statistician. And his goal was to prove to the world that the people who came closest to the truth, who really knew the solution, were the experts, right? So he went to a livestock fair. He loved livestock fairs. And he was walking around in London looking at what was going on and noticed that there was a contest where people were asked to guess the dressed weight of an ox. So that's an ox that's got its head off, its hoofs off, its hide off. What's the weight after all of that? And so he's watching what's going on. And when it concluded and a person had been awarded their award, he went to the judge and he said, could I get the slips of paper where all the guesses have been written down?
Hmm.
And he took those and he lined them up according to here are the experts. Here are the veterinarians, people who know the animals. Here are the people who take care of the animals, and so they see the different personalities, structure, et cetera, of the animals. And then he took the people who just mill around and look at what's going on in a fair, and, you know, they stop, they gather, they look, they see, they move on, just the Joe Blow. Here's what he found that's very interesting. None of the groups by themselves were close to the dressed weight of the ox. But when he took the average, the mean weight of everyone, he was 1 pound from the dressed weight.
Wow.
So what he concluded was, we tend to have experts make decisions. We tend to have the people who are the most knowledgeable make decisions because we think that they have experience, knowledge that will be critical, that will bring us closest to the truth, and they are important. What he found, however, is that to really get a robust understanding, you have to have everybody, including those just quiet observers, the people at the bottom of the rung. So think of it in our corporations when we're making decisions. The leadership will make decisions and it filters downward. We don't take an effort to look at, well, what's warehouse's opinion of what we're doing? And where do they see the challenges? And how does what they're thinking impact what we should really be doing? And should we be taking a look at a cross-section of that?
I love
that. So, from your industry, an interesting little tidbit to add to that was Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a fun show, right?
Completely. And when you say the name, right away I think of the show.
Yeah. So, here's what's interesting about that is you had three lifelines, right? You could ask to have the options reduced to two. So, now you had a 50-50 chance of winning. And then you could also call an expert, a pre-identified expert, and ask them for their opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could ask the audience, right? So who was the closest to getting the best answer, do you think?
Either the audience, or I do recall sometimes you would just, it's almost like phone a friend. I'm gonna call my friend Gary. I think he knows the answer. Gary, help me out here. I don't know the answer. What do you think?
Well, the expert, the friend that you called had a 61% chance of being correct. However, if you asked the audience, you had a 95% chance of being correct. 91 to 95, somewhere in that range.
Incredible.
So again, because that's a cross-section of people bringing different life experiences, and you get closer to what's really happening.
You know what's interesting, Lois? What you're saying now is basically research, because when you want to research a product, you do market testing, you all of that. What are you doing? You're doing a cross-sampling of many different geographics, many different people, ethnic backgrounds, skills, everything. The melting pot all comes together because of their experiences. And what I'm hearing here is it really comes down to everybody has a voice, and every voice should be heard. We're talking with Lois Unstegard, who has worked with business leaders for three decades. Lois, what's your website?
www.buildtomorrow2.com. And I have a second website, www.startwithcollaboration.com.
There you go. We just said collaboration is it. Instant feedback, steve@gmail.com. We have Matt checking in from Brooklyn, New York. He says, I own an industrial company with about 70 employees. I'm trying to create a fun culture to bring unity within. Do you have any suggestions?
You know what? That is huge. And right now, so let me give you an example of some of the things. Fun culture is important. People need to come, show up, and be excited to come to work. It is also important that people have a sense of purpose and meaning when they come to work. And there are many ways that we can put this into place. So let me give you an example. When I was first starting as a director of women's and gynecological services at the University of Minnesota many, many years ago, we had a unit. It was our cancer, end-stage cancer area. We had a very high mortality rate. It was close to 85% at that time. And all the treatments had been done that could be done. And there were no more surgeries, no more medicines. Everything that could be done was exotic. It was experimental. And it was not a fun place to work. It was depressing. The doctors were depressed. The nurses were depressed. Mm. And the place was losing money because people weren't engaged. So what do you do?
What do you do?
What do you do? So here's what's interesting. It was the turnover rate at that time was 180% per year. Never had a qualified staff at that time because the turnover was too fast. Mm. And it was the least desired place to work. In 18 months, we turned it around, so it was the most sought-after place in the hospital, the third most profitable place in the hospital, and had a waiting list of people wanting to work there. How do you do it? You do it by putting passion and hope back into the workplace. People want more than fun. They want to know that when I show up for work, it makes a difference. It makes a difference to you, my employer. It makes a difference to the people that I'm helping. It makes a difference because I go home with stories that are positive, that are uplifting. Yes, they may be sad, but there's a point to them. There's a life behind it, right? That's what people are looking for. It's that connection of, please make my life significant. I want to be more than just a widget showing up for you.
It's crystal clear, Lois, and here's what I got from that. When you go to work, you have a relationship with the people at work, with your boss, with the establishment. If you were to pick a relationship with somebody, let's say, you know, your long-term partner, would you want to just show up every day? I'm here. Okay, I'm phoning it in. All right, I'm on the treadmill, walking out again. I'll be back tomorrow. Okay. You know, benign, cold, you don't feel like you're appreciated. You would never want that relationship, nor should you accept that when it comes to your job. I can't, you know, I never thought of it in that regard.
Right. There's so many. So the interesting thing is these things don't cost money.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's just is it really the value of the company? you know, the values that the company has?
The values, yes, it is that. And here's one of the I think, problems that we struggle with values is right now our companies are challenged to shift quickly. The world is changing. The economy is changing. Supply chain is changing. I mean, those challenges are real and they're very difficult. So you have to shift quickly. One of the things that I think a collaborative model allows you to do, if you design it correctly, is that it allows you to shift your culture and move it with where the company needs to move. So often what we end up having is we have these vision, mission, values that we create. They're over here in the outfield. The company is moving towards first base, trying to get there. And what's going on out base is too far away. It needs to move and come with me as I go. And so I think one of the things that we really have to look at is knowing what our core values are. You don't want to lose those. And then looking at everything else as how do I move them with me as my company moves? Because fluidity, resilience, those are going to be two huge keys, I think, for successful companies in the future.
Crystal clear, because life is ever changing. Why shouldn't a company? You know, you can't just stay stuck in your old ways. Lois, I have to tell you, fascinating talking with you today. We're out of time. Normally, I honestly take a break. I never took one because just you're engaging and have so much insight. And I love the research and the anecdotes. If somebody wants to work with you, let's say it's a company owner, a business leader, whether it's a one-on-one or somebody that wants to look at some of your programs and really have the right mindset, how do they do that?
The easiest is to email me, Lois, L-O-I-S. Superman's girl, that way you won't forget.
Gotcha.
Lois, L-O-I-S, at buildtomorrow.com. B-U-I-L-D, the number two, tomorrow.com. So just email me. That's the easiest, quickest way. My phone number, also you can reach me, 952-200-6539. But email is by far the fastest and the easiest, because if I'm on other calls, I won't be able to pick up a phone call as easily.
Fascinating talking with you, and so important. And there's so much that we can dig into, because what we're talking about is the lifeblood of our country. And if people don't get invested in their job and they don't feel that satisfaction, we got big problems. And again, goes back to what we talked about before. You walk into a lot of businesses and the owners are saying the same thing, that people aren't showing up. They don't want to work. We have to fix that. And I think we're starting, with you today. Great having you on, Lois. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
And we'll be right back.
You've been listening to Building My Legacy podcast with Dr. Lois Sonstegard. To book your appointment with Dr. Sonstegard, visit www.buildtomorrow.com.